Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going
to
find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hello, everybody. Welcome aboard. Peter Schiff, another live edition of Wall Street Unspun, my midweek market outlook. And this is Wednesday, August 20th. July 20th. Next week will be our one-year anniversary. I don't know if I have anything special planned, but the fact that we've been doing this show for a year just shows you how fast time flies. And all of our episodes, you know, going back to a year, all of the Wall Street Unspun episodes are on the website, there to be listened to at your convenience at www.europac.net. www.europac.net. And again, the number to call toll-free, please call with your questions, your comments, whether you want to agree with what I'm saying, disagree with it. The number is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. It's a toll-free call. The lines are open. Always like to hear from clients, long-time clients, new clients, potential clients. This is a forum for people to call in and relate their experiences with Euro Pacific Capital to other listeners. Any event, you know, we had another treat of the theater of the absurd again today when Alan Greenspan testified before Congress. And this is the last time he's going to do that. I mean, he does it again tomorrow before the Senate, but this is the last time he's going to do it, I believe, before his term expires. And, you know, I didn't really get a chance to see what he had to say. I mean, I had him on. I had the television on, but the volume was turned down, as it normally is when I'm watching the financial channels. But I did turn the volume up when Ron Paul came on. And, you know, Ron Paul, those who don't know who Ron Paul is, he's probably the only legitimate representative that we have in Congress who understands the proper role of the U.S. government, understands the Constitution, and who really is an honest guy. I mean, he votes his conscience. I mean, he has integrity. He's a legitimate statesman that we have in Washington, D.C. The problem is there's only one Ron Paul and 400 and however many there are anti-Ron Paul, so he really can't make much of a difference other than a figurehead. But it's nice to have him there. And, you know, a lot of people make campaign contributions to Ron Paul. He's out in Texas. I forget what district he's in, but he gets a lot of contributions from people outside of his district because they regard him as their congressman no matter where they live, because he doesn't look to serve the local interests of his constituents. I mean, that would not be within the Constitution. He's looking to serve the broader interest of the United States as a whole. And so if you're looking to give money to a politician, I mean, he's probably the only one worth giving it to. But anyway, if you want to look, he's got a website, Ron Paul. But the problem I have with Ron Paul is the guy, you know, he talks too much. He doesn't really know how to ask Alan Greenspan a question. He doesn't know how to ask him a quick question, shut up, and then rebut what Greenspan says when he ignores the question or says something so completely ridiculous like you said today. And I'm going to get back to that in a minute. I just wanted to go through a few more housekeeping elements related to what's going on at Euro Pacific. I mean, first of all, I have updated the website to include a scheduled appearances, and it's on the resource section of the website, and you can look at where we're scheduled to appear. And the upcoming event is the Money Show in Washington, D.C., and it's coming up fast. It's going to be August 11th through the 13th. I think that's a Thursday. I think it starts on a Thursday. And I'm going to be giving two presentations, one workshop and one editorial, but they're about 45 minutes in length, and those are official events for anybody who is attending. I am giving a special seminar, a client-only seminar that is not open to the general public at the Money Show. This is the first time that we're doing this at the Money Show, and we'll see how successful it is. If the clients like it, we can repeat it at other Money Shows. But if you want to attend, you need to pre-register. And you can do that by contacting us at Euro Pacific Capital, letting us know that you do want to participate in this client-only event. Now, if you're not a client yet, if you're a potential client, we might still be able to get you in, if you pre-registered and let us know in advance. But nobody who is not registered prior to the Money Show is going to be allowed. Maybe if they can prove that they're a Euro Pacific client, they got their account statement or something. But we have to do this, for the Money Show, because the Money Show is, allowing us the room and some area, but under the condition that it's not open to the general public. Otherwise, we'd have to pay for the facility. They're giving it to us complimentary, but on the understanding that it's not a general event. And plus, I want to have something unique for the clients, give us some time to really spend some one-on-one time with the clients that we've been working with and have a chance to do that. Usually we don't really, we have a much bigger audience at the general workshop, so this will be a smaller crowd, probably no more than 50 people in the room. So, and if you do want to register, it'll be first come, first serve. So if we get too many people signing up, unfortunately, we probably won't be able to accommodate everybody. So give us a call at 800-727-7922 and let us know that you want to attend the client-only workshop. Also, to register for the Money Show, you can do that online. Just go to scheduled appearances, and there's a link there to register for the Money Show. You can also register for the New Orleans conference, the Blanchard conference, coming up in October in New Orleans, and that's a great event. This is the first time we've been at the New Orleans conference in a while, and I think I'm going to be going there every year going forward. I think I'm going to become a more integral part of that great conference. But for those of you who haven't been to it before or have been to it, this would be a great time to go since I'm going to be there. So register on our site. If you're planning on going, definitely register on our site. If you do, then we'll get credit for the referral. But you can register again for the New Orleans conference on our website at www.europac.net, and then go to the scheduled appearances, and just where it says click here to register, just click there and register. Also, while you're on the website, don't forget, if you haven't already done so, download a copy of our research report that's on there, The Powerful Case for Investing in Foreign Stocks. And it's on our website. Try to download that one if you get a chance, because I think pretty soon we're going to update it with another report, so that one won't necessarily be there anymore, and you might forget about it. But if you haven't taken a look at it, it's the first in a series of reports that we're making available to our clients. And again, also, as I said last time on the show, we are working on the introduction of a client newsletter. It will be a subscription newsletter, which non-clients will be able to purchase, but it will be made available for free to a current Euro Pacific Capital clients. And we're looking forward to sharing a lot of information on that newsletter, both related to specific investments and related to the market in general and broad economic issues. Anyway, we've got a caller who's been on hold for a little bit, so let's take a break and take a call. Go ahead, Jeff from Massachusetts.
Yes, sir. How do you think illegal immigration is going to affect the economy? Because illegal immigration is the big thing that's happening right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, immigration in general is good for the economy because you bring in more people who can work and who can add productivity. The problem is with modern-day immigrants in the welfare state that, unlike the immigrants who came to this country, 100 years ago, those immigrants came here for the opportunity. We were a low-tax, low-regulation country, and bright, hard-working people from all around the world came to America because they could succeed here, because government left them alone.
Yes.
Now, today, it's the opposite. People are coming to America for a government handout. We now have a welfare state that meets immigrants, when they come in and shows them how to get food stamps and welfare and free health insurance. And so the problem isn't that we have immigrants, legal or not. The problem is why they're being attracted here. What I believe we should do is we should abolish all these government giveaway programs. We should abolish the welfare state, get rid of welfare and social food stamps and all these programs, and let anybody who wants to come in, come in. Because anybody who comes in is going to help us out.
But
as long as they're not going to come in and get on the dole, you know,
I agree.
They add to the value of our economy.
But let me throw this out. What about Muslim terrorists who don't care about the economy? They just see us as...
I think the terrorist issue and the immigration issue are totally different things. Yeah, obviously, we should make an attempt to keep terrorists out of the country. But, you know, I don't think that the overwhelming majority of immigrants are not terrorists. And cracking down on immigration doesn't mean cracking down on terrorists. I think they're very different issues. And sure, you know, if you toughen up the borders, but, you know, they're very different programs. But most people who think about illegal immigrants think of they're taking our jobs away, or which is nonsense. I mean, there's an unlimited amount of jobs. I mean, they don't take away jobs. They free up labor. If an immigrant's doing a job, that means that a Native American doesn't have to do that. They could do something else. They could do something better. But again, the problem is right now they show up and they get on welfare. You know, 100 years ago when immigrants landed on Ellis Island in New York, they got nothing.
And there was very strict standards on who can come in and who can't. These countries today, and these countries are all socialist countries, they're sending their bottom 25% over to this country. It's like they're dumping their crud on this country, and that's...
I definitely think we have a problem. We have people coming to the country looking for a handout, and you know what I think we're also going to have a problem with in the future is emigration, because I think the most capable Americans, the most hardworking and industrious Americans are going to be getting out of this country.
I agree.
America is becoming a high regulation, a high tax society, and people looking for freedom and opportunity are going to go abroad. And I think, you know, we're on the verge of a major, major economic calamity here with a collapse in the dollar, a collapse of the housing bubble, a lot of unemployment, rising interest rates. I think we're going to have a very, very tough economy, and we might find during that time a lot of Americans, particularly Americans who are already descendants of immigrants. I mean, you could see a lot of American Chinese, for example, decide that it's better to pack up and move back to their ancestral home. Because there is a lot more freedom in communist China today than there is in the United States.
Oh, of course, and that's because of the growth of government, and also.
Yeah, well, now we're in 100% agreement there.
Yeah, and we should. If you look at the Constitution is so small you can stick it in the back of your pocket. Ron Paul is one of my heroes, and you're right. Most politicians are not like Ron Paul. The politicians I got in this state, they only serve the union hacks. They serve the worst of the dredges of Massachusetts. Those are my politicians. No matter how much you...
If we had you know, a few hundred Ron Pauls in there, we might not have... I might not have to have this this program. I mean, if we've had them in there for a long period of time, we might be investing in America today instead of sending our clients money abroad. But anyway, let me segue. I thank you for the call. Are you a client, Jeff?
No, I'm not.
How long have you been listening to the program?
I tuned in tonight, actually. I tuned in tonight. I was thumbing through the shortwave dial, seeing what's on the radio, and I tuned in tonight.
Well, you ought to keep listening. Go to my website and listen to some of the shows that you've missed. But the real purpose of this show is twofold. One is for me to communicate with a lot of my clients at the same time, and a lot of clients are listening to the show. But also as a forum, as a way to reach out to other Americans who might, you know, understand or about some of these problems that we have, but who aren't necessarily doing anything to protect their wealth. And what I'm trying to help the listeners do is to understand that there are solutions available. There are ways that you can try to diversify your wealth, to move out of U.S. currency into assets around the world, collect good dividends, but be in currencies like the Singapore dollar, the Australian dollar, the New Zealand dollar, the Swiss franc, the Canadian dollar, the euro, other currencies, and try to protect yourself from what I believe is going to be a significant decline in a relatively short period of time in the purchasing power of the U.S. dollar. And not just internationally, but here at home. You're going to see a significant increase in the cost of living, despite the propaganda from the government that there's no inflation. Inflation is the most serious threat to America right now, if you're a saver. I mean, if you're a debtor, I mean, inflation potentially is going to bail you out. But it ain't going to be fun to be bailed out, because you might be out of debt, but you're still going to be poor.
Oh, of course.
I would suggest giving us a call, opening up an account. The number to call is 800-727-7922.
All right. I will I'll look at your website and do a very nice night, sir, and keep plugging.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Yeah, I always like to know the audience is growing. We picked up a new listener there in Massachusetts. And anybody else who's listening who wants to call in, the lines are open. The toll-free number to call to get into the show is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Now, as long as the caller brought up Ron Paul, I think we should talk a little bit again about Ron Paul's question to Alan Greenspan. And again, I wish Ron Paul, you know, would have just made a simple question instead of going on for a 2 or 3 minute soliloquy, and then have Alan Greenspan have 20 seconds to duck the issue, and then his time is out, and he can't rebut. But and Ron Paul asked about 10 questions there, but every time he finished asking a great question, he asked another one. And so he gave Greenspan the opportunity to pick which question he wanted to answer and which ones he wanted to ignore. But the bottom line, one of his questions had to do with gold. And, you know, did the chairman think that, you know, we needed to go back on a gold standard, or what would have to happen in order to cause central bankers around the world to reintroduce gold and to have a role for gold? And basically what Alan Greenspan said was that, well, he says that we don't really need gold anymore because the central bankers are so much smarter than they used to be that we've learned how to run our fiat system just as good as if it were backed by gold. That the central bankers are exercising such judicious judgment, and you know that we don't need the discipline of gold anymore because now we have superior bankers, which is such a crock. I mean, what is he doing? First of all, he's patting himself on the back and saying that I'm so smart, I'm so great that I can be just as disciplined as if, you know, even without gold. Remember, gold is what keeps you in check. I mean, central bankers are like little children, and gold is like the rules. And expecting little children to abide by the rules when there are no rules, and saying, look, we're not going to, you know, there's no parents here. We're not laying down any rules for our children. We're just going to let them discipline themselves and expect to get the same result. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. And the reality is, Greenspan is printing money like crazy. So are other central bankers. They couldn't do that if we were on a gold standard. I mean, it would be impossible. I mean, they have absolutely no discipline at all. I mean, they're printing money like drunken sailors. And Greenspan is trying to pretend that he's exercising monetary policy as if we were still on a gold standard? I mean, who is he kidding? I mean, obviously he thought he was kidding the rest of Congress, who probably have no clue what he's even talking about in the first place. And whatever Ron Paul said probably went right over their heads. But, I mean, it was ridiculous what he said. But also, Ron Paul mentioned, he talked about fiat money being the hidden scheme for the confiscation of wealth. And he talked about how the government deliberately pursues inflation. And he reminded Alan Greenspan of his piece from the 1960s, which appeared in Ayn Rand's book, Capitalism, The Unknown Ideal, where he actually talked about, you know, gold as, you know, as the, he had an article called Gold and Economic Freedom, and he talked about gold being an instrument for confiscation from wealth. I mean, here, I'll read a couple of quotes from that passage, and I actually have his entire article on my website. If you go to europac.net and you go to About Us, and you go to the section Our Outlook. At the bottom of that section, Our Outlook, it says click here to read Alan Greenspan, the experts from Alan Greenspan's commentary. And it's a beautifully written critique of the Federal Reserve. And I write on there that it proves that the absolute best critique of Alan Greenspan is Alan Greenspan. Anyway, here's a small excerpt of what he wrote in his article. Quote, in the absence of the gold standard, there is no way to protect savings from confiscation through inflation. There is no safe store of value. If there were, the government would have to make its holding illegal, as was done in the case with gold. This is a shabby secret of the welfare state's triad against gold. Deficit spending is simply a scheme for the confiscation of wealth. Gold stands in the way of this insidious process. It stands as a protector of property rights. If one grasps this, one has no difficulty in understanding the state's antagonism toward the gold standard. Now, I mean, read the whole article. I mean, it's a brilliantly written essay, mainly focusing on the problems of the Federal Reserve during the 1920s, which are very similar to the problems of the Federal Reserve today. But the reason I'm reading this is when Ron Paul said that deficit spending, isn't paper money a scheme for confiscation or deficit repudiation, Alan Greenspan actually said, quote, "I wouldn't call it a scheme. I don't think it's a deliberate, but it just works that way." Now, he did call it a scheme. He was quoting Greenspan and Greenspan. So when Greenspan said, "I wouldn't call it a scheme," he did call it a scheme. Those were his very words. So he said that. But I wish Ron Paul would have left some time where he could have said, "But wait a minute, Chairman Greenspan, you did call it a scheme. Are you changing your mind? Did you think it was a scheme then? But now that when you were on the outside looking in, you thought it was a scheme. But now that you're on the inside looking out, it's just an accident." But a lot of other things that Ron Paul said. I'm going to try to listen to the whole speech from Alan Greenspan, maybe tonight on C-SPAN, or maybe I'll have more time tomorrow afternoon when he talks in front of the Senate, because I didn't get to hear the rest of the questions. But inevitably, whenever Greenspan testifies in front of Congress or the Senate, all you get is a bunch of political grandstanding, where all these crybaby politicians try to act like, the reason that there's, unemployment is rising, or that the income is falling, or that the poor are falling behind, that somehow it's all the fault of Alan Greenspan, and that there's something he can do about it. When the main culprits of the deterioration of the United States are the congressmen themselves, the senators themselves. They are voting for all these government programs. They are burning the economy with so much spending and regulation. They're the principal cause of these problems, not Alan Greenspan. Sure, Greenspan is acting as an enabler. Greenspan could stand up to these guys and refuse to finance their deficit spending, let interest rates rise sharply and bring the economy down and force these guys to be responsible, but he's been very complicit in enabling them. But the real generators of the deterioration of the United States and the American standard of living, the reason that the middle class is falling further and further behind, is not because of something Alan Greenspan is doing. It's because of what these congressmen and these politicians are doing. Yet they're whining about it like they got nothing to do with it, and like the secret solution is in, something Alan Greenspan could do. Like he could just print some money or lower interest rates and solve all the problems that these guys themselves are causing. I mean, it's absolute absurd. As I said, it's like something right out of Alice in Wonderland, watching this happen. But in any event, he's gonna be testifying again tomorrow. And maybe I'll talk about what he says tomorrow on next week's show. But in the meantime, the lines are still open for anybody who wants to call. The number to call toll-free is 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. Let's take a quick break and play a commercial about how to get a hold of us at Euro Pacific Capital, and we'll pick up the program at the other side of the break.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we're back. And again, the lines are open. So callers, 888-678-9597. Let me know you're out there, that you're listening to the program. And give me a break so I can collect my thoughts. 888-678-9597. You know, we've had a lot of earnings have come out. We're full-on earnings season recently, and we've had a lot of earnings coming out, a lot of very disappointing earnings, actually, over the last several days. I mean, there were a couple of reports that were beating estimates. But I think far more significant were the misses. I mean, obviously, today we got earnings out of General Motors and Ford. I mean, just pathetic numbers out of these companies. I think General Motors, I forget which one, had a huge loss. But they both, you know, really missed, and they announced more layoffs. Really bad earnings coming out of Eastman Kodak, and big layoffs announced out of Eastman Kodak. Same thing for Hewlett-Packard, bad numbers, and again, more layoffs. We're seeing a lot of layoffs from, you know, mainstream companies. You know, I don't know who's hiring out there. You know, we're having all these layoffs, and the unemployment rate is still at, 5% or whatever it is. I mean, as the church lady used to say, how convenient. You know, one would have to wonder if these low unemployment numbers are real. Again, I think it has to do with the fact that so many people who are legitimately unemployed are not being counted because they're technically no longer meet the government's narrow definition of unemployment. And I've stated that, you know, if they were calculating unemployment during the Great Depression, the way the government calculates it now, we probably would have had 4 or 5% unemployment back then, too. Because very few people were looking for jobs during the Great Depression because everybody knew that was a depression. They knew there were no jobs. They didn't bother looking. Therefore, by the current definition, they would no longer be counted. You know, also, I keep seeing all these companies announcing layoffs, layoffs here, layoffs there. I don't see anybody announcing big hires. You know, I never see, you know, company, beats earnings, hiring 10,000 more workers to meet growing demand and increasing profitability. I never see those headlines. But where are all these jobs coming from? Again, remember last week we had the jobs number where the government told us that we created another 140,000 jobs, despite the fact that all I hear is news of layoffs. Well, again, I pointed out that lo and behold, over 150,000 jobs of that 144,000 were from the government's assumption of birth death, which meant the government assumed that a number of businesses started. There were a number of us that started our own businesses during the month, and we all hired people. And the government just assumes that these imaginary businesses hired 150,000 workers, even though they have no proof that none of these businesses came into existence or they even hired anybody. You know, so it's very easy for the government to manufacture payroll jobs and to pretend that no one's unemployed. And again, I've also talked about the fact that, you know, if somebody loses their job in America today, it's not really a big deal. Because for the average American, their greatest source of income is not their job. It's their house. So if you lose your job but you own a house, who cares? Right? If you live in California, for example, where the median home price is now over $500,000 and prices are appreciating by 20-25% a year, you're making $100,000 a year because you own a house. Who cares about a lousy $30,000 or $40,000 a year job when you're making $100,000 a year tax free because you're sitting in your sofa watching TV. In fact, if you own a house and you lose your job, rather than looking for another job, just buy a vacation house. Because A, you have more time to take a vacation because you're not working, and B, you'll replace the income that you would have had at your job by the extra profits on your vacation home. So I think the real estate bubble is providing so many unemployed Americans with a solution to unemployment that doesn't involve work. And if you can make money just by being a homeowner, why get a job? So I think the real estate bubble is also helping to minimize the unemployment rate because so many people who are now just classified as real estate investors who are buying vacation homes and third homes, they're not unemployed anymore. They're buying homes. They're employed. They're employed as homeowners. You know, hey, nice work if you can get it. In fact, anybody can get it these days. I mean, you know, you don't need any money down. Anybody can be a homeowner. You don't need a job. You don't need a credit history. All you need is a pulse, and you need to be able to sign your name on a loan doc. You know, and it can be a, one of those no-doc loans where you don't have to prove anything. You know, you just, you know, whatever you have to earn to qualify for the mortgage, by golly, that's what you earn. Just write down whatever you want, and, you know, you've got your ticket to Easy Street. But anyway, a lot of bad economic numbers coming out on layoffs, and a lot of bad numbers coming out of the financial service sector. I saw Countrywide, which is, you know, the nation's largest mortgage lender, had bad numbers. Also, Citicorp yesterday came out with disappointing numbers. They missed by a pretty significant margin. And I think we're beginning to see cracks in the financial services industry. And, you know, the way these guys have been generating revenue in financial services is by, you know, abandoning credit quality. The way they've been able to grow their earnings is by extending credit to more and more marginal people. I mean, people who a few years ago they never would have extended credit to, they're extending credit to now because it's the only way to get their earnings growth. Now, these guys don't care if they can ever get repaid because that's a problem for another quarter. These guys want to make their quarter right now. Now, the fact that a company like Citicorp, you know, or the mortgage lender Home Countrywide, the fact that they couldn't make their quarter, despite the fact that, you know, they're willing to throw all lending standards out the window and do whatever they can to make that number, the fact that they couldn't make it really might be the sign that we're at the end of the game here. There's really they can't lower lending standards any lower because they've already abandoned them completely. You know, so there's not much they can do to grow their earnings anymore, and all they can do is try to manage the contraction. But I think the contraction is going to go out of hand, and also, of course, all these companies are going to find out, just like the telecoms, that vendor financing doesn't work. That if you have to lend your customers money to buy your products, you really haven't sold anything. And of course, on a global scale, the Japanese and the Chinese are going to find out the same thing. That if they're lending Americans money to buy their products, they really haven't sold us anything. All they've done is given us products for worthless IOUs. Also on that note, I read an article on Dell, and the title of it was "Dude, You're Getting a Loan." And what Dell is now doing to drive their earnings is they're getting more and more active in vendor financing. I guess they used to have a referral program where if people were interested in buying a computer, they would refer them to a partner company that would arrange the financing. But I think now Dell is taking this in-house, and they're looking to drive earnings growth now through finance charges and fees. But again, this is very, very shaky ground. And if any of you out there own shares of Dell Computer, I think this is a warning sign that the growth is coming to an end over there. Because if they have to rely on lending their customers money to buy their products, they really haven't sold them. They're shipping a computer, but they're not getting paid. They're taking back an IOU. And you don't know if they're ever going to get paid. And what are they, and if they don't get their money back, what, they're not going to take the computer back? I mean, by the time you realize that the deadbeat guy isn't going to make his payments, I mean, the computer's not worth anything anyway. It could be a year old, and it's an old model, and, you know, used computers, I mean, computers don't retain their value very good. I mean, they don't really make a very good collateral, you know. If you lend somebody money to buy a computer, and they default, even if you get the computer back, I mean, what's a secondhand computer worth? I mean, they're almost like you throw them away. So I think this really shows that big companies like Dell, when they have to resort to vendor financing to drive their revenue growth and their earnings growth, they're really getting into risky waters, and I really wouldn't even believe their numbers. And then, of course, you know, you've got a lot of conflicts in there. This is the same thing, of course, General Motors and Chrysler. I mean, their earnings are terrible now, but they really scraped the bottom of the barrel over the last few years selling cars and SUVs to anybody who could walk into a showroom. And they were allowing people to come in who had no equity in their initial car. Let's say you walked into a GM showroom and you had a car and you owed $10,000 on it, but the trade-in value was only $8,000, right? You were $2,000 in the hole. What General Motors would do was they would let you trade in that car and they would apply the $2,000 difference to the new purchase and roll it all in. And they would give you a 6-year financing, and you can still walk out the door with no down payment, so you can walk into General Motors upside down $2,000 on your car loan, walk out with a brand new car with nothing down. I mean, it was nonsense. But of course now, not only are, the minute they drive that car off the showroom, not only are they underwater, but, you know, as soon as you take a new car off the showroom, it drops out 10 or 20% or something like that. But not only are they down that, but they're already down because they started off in the hole because they rolled the negative equity from their old trade-in. So they're way, way behind. And so what's going to happen in a couple of years when a lot of these people who borrowed money to buy SUVs are out of work and they can't even afford the gas anyway, and they go ahead and hand these cars back to General Motors, or, you know, General Motors is going to find that the value of the loan on their books far exceeds what they can sell those SUVs for. In fact, I think the SUVs are going to depreciate far faster than what their depreciation schedules show. Because with so many unemployed people getting rid of gas-guzzling SUVs, who the hell is going to want to buy them? I mean, what is the second-hand value going to be of a used SUV when there's high unemployment and people are paying $3 or $4 a gallon for gas? I don't know. So these companies are going to be in big, big trouble, and they're going to find out that all these sales that they booked, they weren't really sales at all because they've got their merchandise back, and they got no money. So, you know, the fact that Dell is going down the same slippery path, I mean, again, shows they've been a premier company, they've been driving their earnings, and now they're really going to scrape the bottom of the barrel to try to continue the charade. So I think that, you know, and the market has also rallied up again. We've gotten back up into the vicinity of previous highs. And I think it's a great time for those of you who still have U.S. stocks to sell. You know, I mean, get rid of these things because there's very little upside in the U.S. stock market, in my opinion. I think we're still early in a long-term secular bear market, so there's very minimal upside, and there's a lot of downside risk. There's tremendous downside risk, and the dividend yields are still paltry. So there's no reason to wait out the bear market in stocks because you're not going to get paid to wait it out. You're going to get nothing. And there's a long way for them to go, but remember, the market, I think, could decline a lot further than its nominal amount because the dollar's going to go down. Remember, I've mentioned this in the past, during the bear market in the 1970s, the Dow Jones, from peak to trough, lost about 40% of its value. Of course, the broader market, the NASDAQ-type stocks, fared a lot worse, but the big blue chips lost about 40%. But if you adjust for inflation, the falling value of the dollar lost two-thirds of its value during the 1970s. Currencies like the Swiss franc and the Deutschmark and the Japanese yen basically tripled during that decade. The real purchasing power of the Dow dropped not by 40%, but by 80%. So that's huge. That's a huge decline. I think it's going to be worse this time. I think the U.S. stock market, from peak to trough, adjusted for inflation, could lose 90% or more of its real value. I mean, that's a huge, huge hit. And there's no reason to go along for that kind of ride when you have an alternative, and the alternative is get out. You know, get out of your stocks, get out of your bonds. Now, bonds, we haven't even started a bear market yet. I mean, bonds have been in the bull market, certainly, since 1982 as well. The stock market bull market ended 4 or 5 years ago. The bond bull market is ongoing. But I think that we are in the process of forming a major, major top in the bond bull market. There's no evidence that that top is in for sure. I'm speculating that it can't be too far off, and I think we are working a major distribution top. Right now, I think we've been in the process of building a distribution top in the bond market for the past couple of years. I think what's been sustaining it has been foreign central banks and speculators. But I think once that demand is quenched, bonds are going to collapse. So, you know, there's no reason to wait around in the bond market either. But just getting out of your stocks and bonds is only half the game. You got to finish. You got to get out of the dollar too, right? I mean, if you're on a doomed ship, changing cabins isn't going to do you any good, right? You got to get off that ship. You got to get into a lifeboat. And that's the solution that we're offering at Euro Pacific Capital. We're offering a lifeboat. It's not just get out of the stock market and get out of the bond market, but you got to get out of the dollar. That completes the process. You got to get all the way out. You've got to realize that just having your money in the bank, having your money in T-bills, doesn't mean it's safe. Maybe your dollars are safe. Maybe you won't lose your dollars, but your dollars might lose their value. They might lose their purchasing power. They might lose most of their purchasing power. And that's what you really need. It doesn't really matter how many dollars you have if you can't buy anything with them, right? I mean, they're not good. There's no intrinsic value to those dollars. I mean, you can't do much with them. They don't make good wallpaper. I mean, I guess you can line a birdcage with them if you got birds. But, I mean, there's really no real use for them. So if you can't go to the store and buy things with them, what good are they? And a lot of people ask, you know, they ask the question, well, what difference does it make? I'm in America. Who cares what the dollar is worth? That's some foreigner's problem. Well, that's not true. Think about everything that we consume as Americans. Think about all the products that we buy. Where are they made? Not here. They're made in some other country. And why are they here? How come we're getting them? Because the workers who are making them are willing to accept U.S. currency in exchange for it. Well, how do you know they will in the future? How do you know the Chinese are going to be willing to accept our currency in exchange for their labor next year or the year after that? You don't know that. How do you know that the Arab nations are going to be willing to accept our dollars for their oil? They accept it today, but how do you know they will in the future? You don't. So what you need to do is you need to look around, look in your closets, look around your house, look around at the products you buy. Turn them over, see where they're made. You better have some currencies from those countries. Because, sure, the Chinese will always accept their own currency, right? The Japanese will accept yen. You know they're going to keep accepting yen. You don't know if they're going to accept dollars. And, you know, our ability to consume is completely dependent on foreigners' willingness to accept our paper in exchange for their stuff. Now, you know that I think that's a losing deal. They get something. I mean, we get something, they get nothing. And they're not going to be willing to exchange something for nothing forever. And so before they wake up and discover the truth, you better get rid of your dollars and get a hold of some currencies that they will accept. And fortunately, what we can do at Euro Pacific Capital is you don't have to just sit the currencies, you know, in a mattress. We have identified investments around the world. You know, we invest in, you know, real estate investment trusts around the world. We invest in utilities. We invest in energy income funds, all sorts of dividend-paying stocks. You know, you can also buy bonds. You can buy corporate bonds. You can buy government bonds. You know, if you want government bonds, the United States isn't the only sovereign government issuing debt. We're issuing the most of it. I mean, we're issuing it like crazy. We're issuing it like it's going out of style. And that's a reason why you shouldn't want to buy it. We're issuing so much of it that we're likely to default on it through inflation. So if you really want to loan your money to a government, pick another government, but not the U.S. government. And there are sovereign countries all around the world that I think are better credit risks than the U.S. government. Despite the fact that the U.S. government maintains a AAA rating by Standard & Poor's and Moody's, I think that rating is nonsense. I don't think the U.S. bonds deserve to be rated AAA. I certainly don't think we deserve to have a higher credit rating than Japan. I mean, we're the world's biggest debtor nation, and they're the world's biggest creditor. How can the world's biggest debtor, how can our debt be considered safer than the debt of the world's biggest creditor? We owe the Japanese well over $1 trillion. The only way Japan can go broke is if we go broke first, because they'd have to exhaust their U.S. treasuries. I mean, you understand, if we owe Japan over $1 trillion, how can they default on their debt unless that $1 trillion was already worthless? And if that $1 trillion was already worthless, that would mean that we would have defaulted first. So it seems impossible to me that Japan can have a lower credit rating in the United States, but it does. So it shows you that these rating agencies it's all a scam. They're afraid to tell the truth. You know, I suppose they'll be like these investment banks that had buy ratings on Enron right until they went into bankruptcy. I guess Standard & Poor's is going to have a AAA rating on U.S. bonds right up until they're practically worthless, and then maybe they'll cut the rating. But in the meantime, we can buy you government debt around the world. You can buy high-quality corporate debt. You know, the best companies, I mean, the companies, some of the highest credit quality companies are not American companies. They're foreign companies. So you can get a lot of good credit quality around the world. And that's what we're doing. We're giving people alternatives. We're showing people how to access markets in other countries, how to access stock markets, how to access credit markets as an alternative to simply staying on a sinking ship, staying in a portfolio of U.S. dollars that is doomed. No matter what investment you make in dollars, whether it's bonds, whether it's stocks, whether it's CDs, you're doomed because the dollar has no place to go but down. Based on my analysis of the situation, based on my understanding of economics. Anyway, let's take another break. We'll play the commercial one more time. We'll be back for the last segment.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we're back for the last segment. Again, the lines are open. We only had one call all day. Surprising. Hopefully people are listening to the program. Anyway, give me a call if you're out there, and try to call soon because we're coming close to the end of the show. The number to call is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. And, you know, there's risk in everything you do. You know, I mean, certainly investing internationally involves risks, but investing domestically involves risks as well. It's a risky world out there, and you got to take your pick. You've got to weigh the various risks. You've got to understand them and decide which risks you want to take and which you don't, or which risks you consider to be the most pressing, right? I think that the risks of the dollar declining and of substantial inflation in the United States far outweigh the risks of other currencies declining in value or bear markets breaking out in other countries. It's just you have to weigh the risks and then make your investments accordingly based on the way that you perceive them. But you can't fall into the false sense of security that if you're invested in what the conventional wisdom in Wall Street says is safe, that you're actually safe, because you're not. Because all that conventional wisdom of what's safe is predicated on a sound dollar. Once you accept that the dollar isn't sound, then none of the investments based on that theory are correct. You know, it's more, you know, the expression, you know, garbage in, garbage out. I mean, you know, if you're working on the false conclusion that the dollar is safe, then any investment advice that you're going to render based on that false conclusion is going to also be flawed. Once you understand the real risks inherent in the U.S. currency and, you know, the precipice upon which we're teetering right now as a nation, and you really understand it, it really allows you to put your investments in a very different perspective and understand that what most Wall Street firms pass off as being conservative investments are really anything but. And that to truly be conservative, to truly preserve purchasing power and wealth, you need to look outside the United States. You need to look at the creditor nations. You need to look at countries that produce stuff and not just consume. You need to look at countries that save and not just borrow what everybody else saves. And you can't just keep believing the government numbers. And another case in point, between now and the last show, I think we got the inflation numbers again. And guess what the government told us? No inflation. Consumer prices and producer prices were unchanged. The government told us that there's no inflation. So I guess we don't have to worry about it because the government told us there's no inflation. Well, you know, the government, you know, anybody who's got a eyes or has got a wallet or a paycheck and those shops knows that that's not the case. Now, I just looked today at the state licensing fees. We have a couple new brokers over in your Pacific Capital, and I'm deciding on which states to license them. You know, when they first get started, you know, we don't license them up everywhere because you get a new broker and they might not last. And, you know, every state makes you pay a fee, and you got to pay the fee every single year. And you got to pay it for the whole year. So even if it's December, you know, the end of December, and you want to register a broker in that state, you've got to pay for the entire year, even though he's only going to be in there for 2 weeks. And every state wants you to pay for every broker. Now, me, I also, the firm has to be registered. So Euro Pacific Capital is registered in all 50 states, right? I pay to register Euro Pacific Capital in all 50 states. But even when Euro Pacific Capital was just me, when I was the only one calling people, I had to register the firm in all 50 states, and then I had to register myself in all 50 states. Even though I was the only one, I had to pay twice. Now, I was looking at those fees, and they've gone up a lot recently. I mean, a lot of states that used to be $50 or $100, there's states that were $60 or $115. I mean, these prices are really rising that the states are charging. So if any of our clients out there, when you start to wonder, you know, why we have to charge the commissions that we do, understand how expensive it is to stay in business. I mean, every broker that we employ, we have to register in every state in which they're soliciting business. And we have to re-register them every single year. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. And the states don't even make any exceptions, most of them. I mean, I'm in Connecticut now, but, you know, my mother lives in California. If I wasn't registered to do business in California, then the state of California would prohibit me from handling my mother's account. You know, so there aren't even exceptions, really, for, you know, your relatives or your friends or people who, you know, theoretically don't need protection from the government. But anyway, I'm just looking at how much those fees have gone up recently. I mean, I was surprised. I mean, at how many states and what they were charging. So prices are just going up, but the government keeps trying to tell us that they're not going up. But again, they have a vested interest. The government has an interest in the outcome of these statistics, and the government prepares these statistics. So why would it be difficult to assume that they're being fudged, that they're being reverse engineered by the statisticians to produce a number that they want? They know they want growth to be high. They want employment to be low. They want inflation to be low. They want productivity to be high. So all they have to do is figure out how to calculate and how to establish an index that yields those results and then reverse engineer it to produce that. That's what they're doing. And why the media, why Wall Street just places so much credibility in these numbers, like you know, Moses just brought them down from Sinai, carved by the finger of God into a tablet. I mean, it's beyond me. This is absolutely ridiculous. And again, you know, one of the ironic forces out there that are holding down the CPI is, and I've talked about this before, but it's appropriate to continue to talk about it because the housing bubble keeps expanding to new heights every week. Is the owner's equivalent rent. You know, everybody, you know, housing prices are going up, I mean, double digit every year. In some markets, 20%, 30% a year. I mean, they're rising so fast. And yet, according to the CPI, housing costs are just barely moving up. But, you know, again, how can that be? How can housing prices be rising so rapidly, yet, and housing be the biggest weighting? Housing is the single biggest weighting in the CPI. So you would think with housing prices rising so fast, and if housing is the largest part of the CPI, that the CPI would really be going up. Well, the problem is housing prices are not in the CPI. They're not in there at all. All that's in there are rents, and not even real rents. Actual rents are there, but there's a big weighting of owner equivalent rents. And I've said this, where the government basically to conduct surveys of homeowners and says, hey, Mr. Homeowner, if you put your house on the rental market, what do you think you could get for it? And based on that survey, they determine the increase in rents. Now, I can imagine how they ask that question. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've never been called and asked that question. But what they probably say is, how much did you think you can rent that house for last year? About $1,200 a month? Do you think you'd get about the same this year if you rent it out? Yeah, you know, I might get about the same. Oh, okay. So they can put down no inflation. I mean, I can imagine how they ask these questions. But also, one of the reasons that rents are so low is because nobody's renting anymore. The government has turned all renters into buyers. When you can buy a condo with nothing down and get an interest-only loan and a negative amortization loan at that, for a lot of people who are renters, hell, it's cheaper to buy. And so all these renters who are now buyers, and that's transients, college students, single women just out of college, all sorts of people that never would have been in the home buying market but were always in the home renting market are now no longer renters. So you've got rental vacancy rates at 40 and 50-year highs. It's no wonder that rents are being held in check. They're being held in check by the biggest housing bubble of all times that is causing renters to forego renting to buy. So housing prices are spiraling out of control, yet there's no impact on the CPI because housing prices aren't in there. All that's in there is rents. And so it's really ironic because the more inflation the Federal Reserve creates, the easier their monetary policy is, the more air they blow into the housing bubble, the more they suppress rents. So by creating inflation, they actually keep the CPI from going up. Isn't that a beautiful situation? They can create all the inflation they want, and the more they create, the more pressure they put on the CPI not to rise. So they can keep saying there's no inflation while they're inflating till their heart's content. Now, the problem with this is so many people out there are relying on these false signals. There are people all around the world that actually think that there's no inflation. They actually believe this propaganda. Now, a lot of it has to do with the fact that they want to believe it. I mean, this is good news, right? Everybody wants to believe there's no inflation, certainly if you're in the financial services industry, if you're selling people bonds. If you're trying to tell people to buy bonds and get a 4% yield or 4.5% yield, you certainly want to help convince them that there's no inflation. You don't want to tell them, hey, inflation is really 10%, but buy these bonds that only yield 4% and take a 6% hit. So certainly they have a reason to want to believe it, so I guess they believe it. They just like those monkeys. They cover their ears or their eyes. They don't want to see what they don't want to see. They don't want to hear what they don't want to hear, and they just swallow the government propaganda that's being spoon-fed to them. And hopefully the people who are listening to this program, I mean, what I'm trying to do is yank that spoon out of your mouth and tell you the truth and let you know that you're not getting financial news, you're not getting advice from the mainstream, from the media, from your other brokers. You're getting propaganda. And you've got to take charge of your own finances. You know, I've said before on this program, many of you work a lifetime to accumulate your wealth. It's going to be a shame to watch it evaporate one night while you're asleep. One night when you go to sleep and the Japanese and the Chinese decide that they don't want dollars anymore. And you wake up in the morning and you're broke. I don't want to go to sleep every night wondering if I'm still going to have any wealth in the morning. You know, I mean, when people say their prayers, you imagine a little kid, you know, before you go to sleep, you say your prayers. What every American ought to pray for every night is that while they're asleep, the Bank of Japan, the Bank of China keep buying dollars. That's what we ought to be praying for. Because the minute they stop, the party's over. And I don't want to go to bed every night realizing that I only wake up solvent if the Japanese and the Chinese are stupid for one more day. So don't take those kind of chances. You know, take control of your personal financial situation and build a portfolio, a globally diverse portfolio of assets around the world, and just stop going to sleep every night, you know, betting on a long shot. And again, it's not just me that says this. You remember former chairman of the Federal Reserve, Paul Volcker, was quoted as saying that he thinks that there's an 80% chance that the dollar will collapse, those are his words, in the next 5 years, 80%. Now, if you look at the reverse of that, that means that the former chairman of the Federal Reserve believes that there's only a 20% chance that the dollar won't collapse. 20%. That's a 5-to-1 long shot. Do you want to go to sleep every night betting your retirement on a 5-to-1 long shot? I don't. And I certainly don't want my clients to. So I want to get out of a long shot. And I want to put my money on a better bet. I want to go with the favorites. And the favorites, unfortunately, right now, are not in the United States. So again, if you don't have an account with us, give us a call. I know we've got guys in the California office probably still working tonight. It's only, you know, getting in on 6 o'clock out there in California. It's 800-727-7922. 800-727-7922. Call and talk to a broker. Find out, you know, if we've got, you know, some ideas that might be suitable for you. If you've got an account already, if you're thinking about adding to it, you know, now's a good time to do it. You know, pick up the phone, find out if there's any new investment ideas that we have that you maybe don't have in your account, and find out if, you know, if it wouldn't be a good time to add another security or two to your portfolio. Also, again, you know, we're getting into the last few minutes of the program. Don't forget, keep visiting the website at www.europac.net. You'll notice some more changes on the site. Again, we've got the scheduled appearances. I've added a few more pages on there, kind of more explaining the Euro-Pacific Capital Advantage when it comes to buying and selling foreign stocks. You know, we've added the section on our analysts. So far, we only have one analyst on board, Andre Sharon. You know, we are building up an internal research department. So that's there. We've got the research report. We've got the newsletter coming up. You know, and we'd like to see as many people at these money shows. If you haven't been to Washington, D.C., I know August is probably not the best time to come, but the hotel is air-conditioned, and you might as well see where all your money is being wasted if you haven't been there in a while. Any event, thanks, everybody, for listening. Tune in again next week. Again, it's always at 8 o'clock on Wednesday nights, every night, Wednesday live. And you can listen to the rebroadcast. If any of your friends missed it, tell them to go to www.europac.net and play the radio show on demand, either this one or any of the shows I've done. In the meantime, thanks, everybody, for listening. Again, this has been Peter Schiff, president of Euro-Pacific Capital in Newport Beach and now Darien, Connecticut. Give us a call toll-free, 800-727-7922. Thanks for listening. Tune in again next week. So long.